been invited by the committee on private members' legislative proposal and special petition. After receiving legislative proposals from Honorable Denley, who seek to propose an amendment to the Choice of Termination of Pregnancy Act, which we thought for the committee to arrive at a well-balanced, fair determination, your contribution may help us to, you know, have a fair understanding of what advice should we give to the Parliament, whether the proposed, you know, amendment should go ahead through the Portfolio Committee, or we should advise that there's no need out of what you'll be sharing with ourselves. I'm going to, of course, I know that we don't have the laxity of time. I know also that you are going to submit written submissions, so you'll just be, you know, dealing with the summary of what you are giving to us, and then members will then get clarity from what you are presenting, then we'll then take it from there. Can we check any apologies that we received?
Good morning, thank you. Good morning, members. We have received apologies from Ms. Mulabasi, Mr. Fichler, Honorable Madaka, and Honorable Machumi is still on sick leave as well.
From the stakeholders, any apologies that you are carrying upon? It looks nothing. We would then invite the South African Human Rights Commission to take us, you know, in their presentation. Over to you, Commissioner, and you are welcome once again.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Honorable Members of Parliament, and thanks so much for having given us a very short opportunity to make our little presentation. And I must upfront apologize that I may not leave my written presentation because I just got a final confirmation on the 28th of May, which did not give me enough time to leave a properly motivated document, which our office in Cape Town will work on it and bring it back to you. We sincerely apologize for that. With me is the Deputy Chairperson of the South African Human Rights Commission, Commissioner Grace Govender, and then our Parliamentary Liaison Officer, Judith Cohen. She's the one who will work this document back to you. And we really apologize, but we just felt we have to honor the call to appear before this honorable committee. I'm not going to dwell much on it, but I'll just as proposed, and I mean, we all know what the Constitution and the subsequent legislation on termination of pregnancy was intended to achieve, and I don't want to repeat that. We know why it has to be enacted, mainly to protect the rights of women to determine what they would want to see happen with their body, their choices, and the like, and to make sure that when that is done, it's done within the prescribed legislation. And we know even now in the new legislation there are prescriptions under which termination of pregnancy must take place. It prescribes exactly the steps, the period within which must take place, precautions that must be taken, and what must happen in terms of counseling the patient. You will note that once that legislation was passed, there was a significant increase on the number of abortions that took place in the country. And to some extent, it did minimize the number of illegal abortions, And you know, judging from reports from the Medical Research Council, that somehow there begins again to be a decline in the number of abortions that are taking place. I'm not sure I know the reason why, but it's something that maybe as you go on and more people appear before you, you will have to interrogate. What was actually worrying on our part as the Human Rights Commission is that despite the fact that we've got legislation that provides for termination of pregnancy, you still had a number of street abortions out there in the rural areas, and we are asking ourselves whether we are doing enough in terms of informing the people of what their rights are in terms of this legislation, and to also check whether the department did in fact make adequate provisions that will in the end cover even the people who are located in the rural area. And we feel there is a great need to attend to that, particularly on the rural area. And we feel that we are worried that there is a gap between implementation and policy, which is something that we feel the department must look into, and that there must be an enabling, supportive environment and infrastructure that should be provided in the rural areas. And termination of pregnancy, we feel strongly that it needs to be decentralized. In other words, it should be there, visible in all the rural areas and the like, and that there should be adequate resources for the termination of pregnancy services, which need to be dealt with. And we feel also that healthcare providers should be supported to provide quality termination of pregnancy services as it currently is. We are focusing mainly on the rural areas. It's much better in the cities, but the people out there seem to be at a loss. And maybe just to talk mainly on the thrust of the amendment, I think the amendment seemed to be intended mainly to be extra cautious before an abortion is performed. It makes provision for additional counseling, additional information, which is currently not covered in the Act or in the Constitution. And it seemed to be suggesting that there could be instances where people have undergone an abortion without knowing exactly what is happening. And it intends intensifying the counseling, the advice that should be given to a woman before going on a termination of pregnancy, to avoid a matter of a Zinat Pillay, you know the Zinat Pillay versus Marie Stopes clinic, where it is suggested that maybe this particular woman was not properly informed, not properly advised. We really appreciate the endeavor to ensure that there must be this amount of information. But having said that, as far as rural people, and perhaps even in the main cities are concerned, there are people who are still far from making use of this legislation. There are still no adequate provision for these people to access these services as prescribed in the Act. And to some extent, we feel strongly that if we put this amendment into legislation, entrench them into legislation, and allow government to prescribe exactly what must be gone through before you go on abortion, as suggested in the amendment, that will add to the already number of people who cannot access this. Because once it's in the legislation, it becomes something that it's taking place. And we feel that on the consideration which we list here in this document that will be handing over probably next week, we feel strongly that we find it difficult to support that this should be put in a legislation, while it is something that can be done and nobody can stop. We still feel that it is within the choice of an individual. If I feel I need counseling, I need to see what the fetus like or it is advanced and the like, then it's up to me. But with government, as we see it, not adequately able to even administer the act as it stands, whether it's due to financial constraints or unwillingness, I'm not sure. But if we add an extra burden, then that becomes an obstacle towards the very same purpose for which this act has been provided for. So in a summary, this is what our position is, that at this stage, unless there are other persuasive circumstances, we feel that this will further hamper access to this to the proceeds of this legislation. But my colleagues here will be prepared to take questions, but that is our stance, and I think I will quickly stop here so that we allow you time as the chair has requested us. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Members, there you go. Any clarity-seeking questions from the presentation of the Human Rights Commission? Honorable Sosibo, Honorable Filia.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Commissioner, for your thank you for your briefing, Commissioner. What I would like to know, is there any mechanism or any steps that has been taken, that you have been taking to sensitize the rural people about this choice of termination, because seemingly they are left not knowing anything. As a result, they are still going on backyard doctors. Thank you for that.
Thank you, Honorable.
Thank you, Chair. Just a question to the Commissioner. Clearly, we don't want to reopen the whole debate about when is a fetus a human being, and is your duty not also to respect the rights of the unborn child, who in this case would not be in a position to cry out for help. But essentially, if I read the essence of the legislative proposal, the concern is that the whole notion of informed consent is captured in the regulations, and the regulation is not easily available, especially not in rural areas, etc., and that the only intention of the Act essentially is to make it component of the Act which is enforceable, so that whoever is processing termination of pregnancy, they should ensure that those patients who come to them, or individuals who come for an abortion, are adequately informed about what is going to happen and some of the emotional constraints that they will face afterwards, maybe feelings of guilt, etc., etc. So I find it difficult that we can protect the state from a basic human rights perspective, to say that the state cannot administer it at present, so we cannot place another additional burden on the state. I think it could be possible if we really want to make sure that those mothers who come are adequately informed and not just come to be faced with feelings of guilt in the rest of their lives that lie ahead of them. So the detail of the proposal was evaluated in previous meetings, but as I said, the essence of it is that the regulations are there, they're not implemented, and now we must just process something to make it component and compulsory in terms of the Act. And clearly there could be systems. The counselling, if you go for any operation, you know, you have to sign certain consent forms, etc., and you have a right to information, etc. The intention of the Act and the introduction of the amendment to the Act is to make sure that mothers know exactly what is happening so that they can justify the process that they are going through. Could you perhaps just respond to the notion of protection for the unborn child's rights, and also just respond to the issue of the fact that it is there, but it's encapsulated in the regulations, and you're only basically bringing it right into the core of the Act. Thank you, Jim.
Commissioner.
Yeah, I think my deputy will also help me here. In terms of what steps we have taken or has been taken, I know that the South African Human Rights Commission, I think in 2009, held a public inquiry into healthcare services, and there is a report to that effect to analyze the situation. Maybe my deputy can talk more to that. We have tried, but you can understand how vast the rural areas of our country is like, and how some of the individuals in the rural areas view the issue of termination of pregnancy. I share your sentiment in terms of protecting the unborn child, and it is of concern to anybody, particularly when you think it's a life that you are taking away, that there must be something very concrete that forces you to take such an action. In other words, it should be an action that once you decide to take it, it's because it is a last resort. It's not something that you can just simply take away. I think I do appreciate that. And what worries me, though, is precisely what you're saying, that it is there in the regulation. It is not being. So if you up the standard, I mean, that's why I say I don't know why sometimes you think the government is not doing enough. You don't know whether it is the reluctance or what is difficult, lack of funds. But now, if even on the regulation, they are not implementing it. So if you put it in a legislation, aren't you making it even more difficult? I'm not sure whether we are not able, either as parliamentarian or as human rights institution, to put pressure on the government to step up the implementation of the regulations as they stand, because the regulations will be more flexible than when you have it in legislation. I just think we are even making it more difficult for the poor woman to access legislation, because then that is going to be compliant. And only to find that there are no health service people to assist this particular. It is precisely that the upping of that standard that we feel it will make this particular act not accessible to an ordinary individual. But I'll ask the Deputy Chair maybe to add.
Thanks very much, Chair. I think in relation to the first question around the mechanisms to sensitize rural people about the TOP, the Human Rights Commission did an investigation into health services. There is a report. The report was tabled to Parliament, and the onus is on Parliament to to ensure that government enacts that report, enacts the recommendations contained in that report. So one of the things that we would recommend is that this committee play an active role in terms of ensuring that that work, the hard work that's been put into that health report, is actually effected. Because Parliament has that role and that responsibility and that power and that mandate. So that's in relation to the first issue. In relation to the second issue, I think you rightly say that you don't want to reopen the debate on the question of the definition of fetus versus the question of at which stage does the fetus become a child. There was a significant debate, public hearings, etc., that Parliament went through in enacting that piece of legislation, the original Termination of Pregnancy Act. I think it was in 1996. So I don't think, I think if you're saying you don't want to reopen that debate, I think we would respect that and we would not reopen that debate. I think we can, but I think it's perhaps not the place to reopen that debate. I think that debate was conducted extensively in Parliament. I was actually part of that debate in Parliament as part of the, at that stage, as part of the ad hoc committee on the House committee that's looking at this bill. Because I think that that issue really is a little bit at the heart of this bill, this amendment. And I think it's important that the question of what is the motivation of this bill be made absolutely clear. Because is the motivation to ensure access to the Termination of Pregnancy Act in its fullest sense, or is it to actually begin to shift the intention of access and the right to choice? Because I think that must be, there must be clarity about that from those who are the proponents of this bill. In terms of those who motivated this bill and the issue of where this bill now stands, the original Termination of Pregnancy Act, a critical motivation was the issue of the number of deaths every year in this country from so-called illegal pregnancy. And subsequent to the Act, the latest figures that we have from the second confidential inquiry into maternal deaths in South Africa, 1999 to 2001, shows that there was a 90% reduction in the abortion-related deaths per year. And that's a huge number of lives of women in this country. And it's particularly benefiting young women under 30 who were dying prior to, who were actually significantly affected by the lack of access to reproductive choice. Those young women previously were mainly poor and black, and mainly in rural and informal settlements in the country. So I think a reduction of 90% is extremely important in terms of the rights that are enshrined in the Constitution, in terms of bodily integrity, in terms of substantive gender equality, etc. The issue of the point you're raising about dealing with the emotional response to a decision such as termination of pregnancy, I think absolutely it's really important to protect and to support anyone who has made such a painful decision, because I don't think anyone who makes such a decision does it lightly. It's a very, very serious decision, and anyone who makes such a decision requires the necessary support. Unfortunately, what is proposed in this amendment will not support any person going through such a process, and I want to just look at specific things such as section 3.I.3, which says that it must provide information including electronic pictures and photographs. That's a very specific, emotionally charged piece of information, and I think that it would be really useful within this committee and particularly within the proponents of this bill to actually look at honestly what is the impact of that going to be on the woman or the young girl who has actually made such a painful decision to actually go through this. The second is 3.1.4, includes discussion of the extent of the risks involved, and part of the risks involved, which are listed here, includes breast cancer. Now, I'm not sure, and I think the health department may be able to bring greater clarity on the whether there's a direct link between termination of pregnancy and breast cancer. And as far as I know, and I'm not a doctor, there is no direct link between the two. So I would just like to actually look at the proponents of this bill actually getting their facts correct in terms of making claims around medical issues. The final is the in relation to the motivation for this bill, which I think must be examined, is 3.1.5, available alternatives to abortion, including adoption, and state and other support available to the mother. And I think the issue of the available alternatives to abortion, in the context of a very strong lobby that does exist in terms of the woman or the young girl actually undertaking termination of pregnancy, would have seriously considered a lot of these alternatives. And in the context of the need for the education of healthcare providers to respect the rights of women and girls in this particular context, and anecdotally, and I'm sure there's also studies around this, is that there's the issue of respecting that right and what sort of information is actually provided in terms of trying to persuade those who've made the painful decision to actually change their minds. I think I won't go into the issues of the further than that, but I think it's really important that when this committee actually examines this, when Parliament examines this proposed amendment, that it really seeks to clarify what is the intention of this amendment, whether it's to assist the women who go through this termination of pregnancy, or whether it's actually to undermine that right that has been enshrined in the Termination of Pregnancy Act. I think the secondary questions of to what extent are, and a very important question of to what extent the bill can be made to ensure that it's accessible to particularly those who are poor and those in rural areas, are questions that the health department must answer in relation to how it's actually doing that as effectively as possible. And I think the critical question that was raised in the time of promulgation of the Termination of Pregnancy Act was the question of government and society as a whole expanding reproductive choice in the context of expanding political, economic, and social choices as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Maybe in a summary, Commissioner, if you were to be heard, what would you advise? Would you then say the department should find alternative way of making sure that the implementation and the intention of the said act is accurately, done, or you then said no, indeed we need an amendment? I wanted that pronouncement.
No, I completely. I'm speaking as part of the Human Rights Commission. The chair has already clarified our position. Absolutely, our position is that we do not support this amendment. We don't think it actually advances human rights in our country. Thank you.
Well, if you allow, Chair, we feel strongly that we would also urge the Committee on Health to put pressure on the Minister, because if at all the Department of Health was doing what is in the regulation, maybe the thinking of the drafters of this, they would not have gone to this extent. I don't know what pressure has been put on the Department to make sure that it implements what the Act wants to see happen. I mean, we are equally concerned, just like I just thought I needed to have that.
Thank you very much. Members, is there anything to wrap up in the presentation of the human rights?
No? Just the issue of the Act prescribing informed consent. How would the Human Rights Commission describe informed consent? And please, I'm not the proponent of the bill. I'm just as a member of Parliament, we always have to look at the merit of any proposal that is placed before us and really inquire to get a balanced sort of view. Now, according to one of the submissions made by the Catholic Bishops' Conference, they said the courts described informed consent on the basis of four basic requirements. One, it's knowledge of the nature and extent of the harm or risk. Two, an appreciation and understanding of the nature and extent of the harm or risk. Three, consent to the harm and or assumption of the risk. And four, comprehensive consent, including the consequences. Now, okay, that becomes a very legally charged sort of...
Could you repeat the last one?
Comprehensive consent, including the consequences. Okay, and this is quoted from two specific judgments. So, actually, essentially, it is in the Act. But the extent of the responsibility, the onerous responsibility of all those institutions...
Maybe, Honorable Kellyanne, can I call that we reduce our, not deliberation, but seeking, you know, clarity, seeking specifically, so that we will have our own time to deliberate and you'll bring all those things.
Okay, I just wanted to then ask them, do they agree with the description of informed consent?
As far as we are concerned, specifically, I mean, the Act is more elaborate on that. And based also on what the deputy chairperson has said, you know, the emotions of this individual who decided to terminate pregnancy, if you are subjected to this type of question, suppose we were to put this into operation, it's going to be very strenuous. Even to suggest that an individual who has been sexually abused must carry this child in order to have the child adopted, the trauma is just too deep, and we think subjecting a person to this type of treatment, I mean, for a person to come to a decision to terminate pregnancy, it's a huge process. And ours is to assist and follow the route that will ease the burden of this mother. And I think what is in the Act, for us, it is sufficient. I'm sure the chair might want to say.
I think I completely support what the chair is saying. I think that it's there's a difference between support and informed consent that is supportive, and informed consent, the way in which that can be defined, as in this amendment, the proposed amendment, which can interrogate. And I think there's an important distinction. If you're interrogating somebody's decision, you're not being supportive by providing the kind of informed, the information that is truly going to be supportive and helpful to you making that decision. So I would support what the chair has said. Thank you.
Honorable Pretoria, I'm sure you are the last now to all this.
Just a quick question. Maybe the answer has already been given, but I just need some confirmation from Mr. Mashwana. Are you saying that the regulations promulgated under the Act effectively already covers the objectives trying to be achieved in the proposed legislation? Is that the way that I must interpret that? And you're saying that the Department of Finance must simply do the Department of Health must simply do their job by implementing what already exists in the form of regulation.
Thank you, Chair. I think even the drafters of this document, they are saying that they are putting this Act so that it complies with the regulation. Already there is an overstatement of what must be done to this particular individual. What I don't see, though, is what is it that we have done to pressurize the department to do what is in the Act, because surely if we were to do what the Act wants us to do, we would have seen an improvement on that.
Thank you very much, and I want to take this opportunity to thank the Commission for, you know, availing themselves to share with us the understanding they had in this matter. And thank you very much. If you had other commitments, you are at liberty to attend to them. May I then now invite the Department of Health to take us through? I'm sure you may hear that almost you are already in the, you know, side that is not in equity. Okay. Thank you. We will appreciate that, so that when we deliberate, we should have all the resource documents in our disposal. Over to you, Honourable.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks to the commissioners, because they've actually dealt with everything that needs to be dealt with, especially Commissioner Govender, because I think it provides institutional memory, and I'm going to take over from where she stopped, because I got involved at that point and moved on with it. But before I present, Chair, I need to tender some apologies, and I've been asked to tender these apologies. I'm Dr. Kaule. I'm the Director of Women's Health and Genetics at the National Department of Health. I came straight from the Eastern Cape here because there was no one else to come here, and we did indicate that. And I need to convey the apology of the Acting Director General, because they are held at the National Department of Health. My immediate boss, the cluster manager, went to Brazil with the minister, and I'm left with dealing with this. But because of my intimate association with it, it's a job that I consider to be very easy and very close to my heart. The summary of our presentation is actually one page, and I will go to it after responding to a few things and indicating a few things. The regulations that are referred to are obviously 1997 regulations. And since that time, a lot of water has gone under the bridge, including the amendment of the Principal Act. And in the amendment, the first act of 2008, it's clear what should be done. And one of the things or provisions in that act is that the MECs, members of the executive committee in provinces, can prescribe any regulation. So if there is a need for any new regulation, it can actually be done at province. And that is to actually address issues of access and proximity to the people who need the service more. And the MEC does that in consultation with the Minister of Health. That is the provision. But also in the Principal Act, it's very clear in the preamble that termination of pregnancy act is not intended to make sure that there's lots of terminations of pregnancy. If anything, we shouldn't be looking at terminations of pregnancies going up. They should be going down, because it works hand in hand with family planning. A woman who doesn't fall pregnant doesn't find herself in a circumstance where she is pregnant and it's an unwanted pregnancy. Would never need termination of pregnancy. And I'm not going to go into the emotive and other issues that are surrounding this. And I think Commissioner Govender dealt with that. We don't need to go back to that argument. And this argument was there in 1996. It was there in 2007. In fact, 2004. It went to court. We dealt with the public consultation issues that were raised. And during the public consultations, I was one of the people who went around the country, literally went around the country, addressing people, even in rural areas where I come from and where I know the problem. And Chair, if you can indulge me, I have to give this story, because it sometimes comes through as if healthcare providers are insensitive people. We are extremely sensitive. As a young doctor in 1981, I worked in Mafikeng. And I'd never seen a patient dying on my hands. And the first patient that died on my hands, not because I was not capable, I believe I was extremely capable because I was well trained for 3 years before that, was a young girl of 16 who had bled in a remote area because she was pregnant, talked to the boyfriend, and the boyfriend said, see how to finish. And she bled. When she came into the emergency area at Bopilong Hospital then, we did everything we could do, and she died. And that was extremely traumatic to me. So I always make this statement that I believe women shouldn't die or young girls shouldn't die because of unsafe abortion, if I may put it that way. So this is the intelligence I wanted to put through to you, Chair. Coming back to what is being proposed here, I think Commissioner Mushwana, in his opening statement, and I would like to thank him in absentia, referred to a fetus. And you'll see in the proposed amendment, there's an issue of an unborn child. And that's a very emotive thing. It comes back to you, Honorable Member. Immediately I talk about an unborn child, it implies that this is a viable child that, given the opportunity, would actually survive and be a productive member of the society later. And that's always the catch, and it came during the old argument, it came during the amendment process, and that's why I say we shouldn't go there, because we could talk for the whole day. We always prefer to be specific to us, and doctor, I don't know if you're a medical doctor, but I am a medical doctor, and I am also trained in ethics. I did a postgraduate diploma in ethics because I needed to understand more what the involvements are. And coming from that, knowledge, appreciation, and consent, in informed consent, can actually be looked in another way, and people use it differently in my interest. Information, comprehension, and volition. Information is knowledge. The healthcare provider gives adequate information to the user of the service, ascertains, and unfortunately it can only be that healthcare provider because it's a one-on-one, ascertains that there's comprehension of that information. And it doesn't necessarily have to be termination of pregnancy. If you present to me and I'm going to give you penicillin, and you say to me, you would like to have ampicillin, we engage, and I'll give information to you. And information is actually a two-way process. It's not a one-way process, because we are not paternalistic. We went past the paternalistic state. After that engagement, there is agreement, and that is comprehension. And then the last step would be volition, where the choice is exercised, based on information given, based on comprehension of the information. And they link up. I mean, everyone uses it. When you appreciate what's being given to you as information, you are actually comprehending it. It's just words that are different. And then you give consent, and consent is informed in that way. So I always use the ICV approach, not the KAC approach, but they're basically the same. And having said that, I want to go back to the issue of increasing access to the service. And maybe the department might be seen as not having done much, and I think Commissioner Mushwana indicated that. The department, from what I've already said, has done a lot. We've been going around, we've talked about it. We always make it clear that the intention of the Choice on Termination of Pregnancy Act is not to increase terminations of pregnancy. The intent is actually to reduce them. But we are obliged to exercise the right that any woman can exercise, and the Constitution allows that. Chair, I distributed two other documents, and the biggest document I wanted to refer to is the Patients' Rights Charter. And many professions have got their professional bodies that will always talk about informed consent, about confidentiality and privacy. And in the Patients' Rights Charter, which, interestingly enough, shows how all these things were engaged with by our government at that particular time, this was started, the debate around it was started around in the 90s as well. But I want to refer to one or two things, and I hope all the members have that patient's rights charter. Access to health care, that's number three in the patient's rights. Healthy and safe environment is there. Participation in decision making is part of the informed consent process. Access to health care is provided for in the patient's rights care. Knowledge of one's health insurance, we can leave that. Choice of health services, there's always this choice, and it's based on understanding and having the information. Confidentiality and privacy. And even under the patient's rights charter, the government dealt with informed consent. And everyone has the right to be given full and accurate information about the nature of one's illnesses, diagnostic procedures, the proposed treatment, and the costs involved for one to make a decision that affects any one of these elements. And there's refusal of treatment as well. A second opinion is called continuity of care. And continuity of care actually covers the issue of once informed consent has been sought and information has been imparted before the procedure. After the procedure, this continues as part of care. And that should be the case. And if there is a complaint, which even can lead to court, that is a right and catered for. So I think the government, and including the Department of Health, because it's the custodian of the patient's rights charter, have done quite a lot. Whether this cascades all the way to, especially the rural area, is another story, and we can talk about it for a long time, Chair. But I thought I should give that background. And at the end of the patient's rights charter, there is a responsibility of the patient. It's not an issue of rights only, there are responsibilities. And those responsibilities are listed there, and every healthcare provider has to be sensitive to those responsibilities, even if they are responsibilities that come from the user side. And I'm using the user as the term that is used in the National Health Act. So having said that, Chair, I think that shows that there is no ignorance of what the provisions of the Principal Act are. But it's critical as well to understand that this process went through during the amendment in 2008. And I had lots of engagement with the applicant, Honorable Member Cheryl Dudley. And we had these engagements a lot at Parliamentary Portfolio Committee level, during the consultation process that was engaged in. So it's not an issue. What has changed possibly are faces that are in the different committees. And we don't need to repeat the process for the sake of repeating it. Because that just have no purpose. And having said that, Chair, I also had a page from on choice of termination of pregnancy per se, which I took from a document which we will provide the full document, but it was just a different number of things. And in that, there was a look at a minor as provided for in the Principal Act, which technically could be a child in the Children's Act, but that's how it was provided for. And the rest of the provisions are there. And it dwells on patient confidentiality, because that's extremely critical. There should be confidentiality. Just to go to the response from our legal side, I'm not legally trained, but maybe I've learned a lot from the legal people I've dealt with. The response is that to amend the Choice on Termination of Pregnancy Act 92 of 1996, as amended by the Choice on Termination of Pregnancy Amendment Act 1 of 2008, as to ensure a woman or child is able to make a fully informed choice regarding the termination of a pregnancy. One. The proposed amendments by the applicant can be appropriately dealt with in the guidelines or directive for healthcare professionals or providers involved in or conducting, even performing the termination of pregnancy, and not in regulations as they are procedural issues. They are issues that can be dealt with procedurally. In any way, perusal of the regulations under choice on termination of pregnancy published under Government Notice R168 in the Government Gazette 17746 of January 31st January 1997, will confirm that the issues recommended are already and broadly provided for in the provisions of the regulation. We don't have to go into detail, because then we can even have to go into detail of how we should approach amputating a right leg, not even a leg, a right leg. It appears to the department that the applicant's proposal's recommendations were motivated by a single isolated incident in which a healthcare professional concerned seems not to have followed the correct procedure, and this should be dealt with in its context. Note that the procedural issues proposed by the applicants are actually a standard procedure followed by all healthcare professionals, guided by their professional bodies, even the patient's rights patient's rights charter, which is a government document, in conducting performing termination of pregnancy in health establishments. As such, the department does not support the proposed amendments of the applicants and opposes the proposed amendments as unnecessary. That is the standing of our department. But I would be happy to engage in some questions. But Chair, I must again repeat that we don't need to go back into all those procedures. I even said to Mr. Khata, if I had the chance, I would have gone to the archives and got all the arguments that went through and were recorded during the two processes, 1996 and 2007-2008. Thank you, Chair.
I think, Esther, I'm going to invite honourable members for clarity seeking questions. The last part,
yeah,
to request that you go there to your ICAS and then forward it to us,
yeah,
so that we'll check whether the debate that we are engaging in,
yeah,
was once engaged and decided upon, so that we don't waste, you know, Parliament's time in,
yeah,
that regard. Honourable Kaden.
Just a sort of little bit of a follow-up to the doctor. Can I just ask you, would you concur with some of the statements made earlier, especially by the Human Rights Commission, that it would be too difficult to administer the regulation? Well, it is already difficult, and once it is made sort of a compulsory component of the Act, then it would place an additional administrative burden on the department. Are you satisfied that you have the necessary capacity at these centres and that they are monitored, so that if you say it's not necessary, it's already made, you know, we've already made provision for it in the core Act. Is it really being implemented? Is you know, informed consent? Is it moved in a particular way? Do you have forms that patients sign to say that they have been informed of all the sort of consequences, etc.? Then just the second tiny issue, as I understood from Honourable Dudley, who introduced the Act, there was a concern that we should keep up to date with technological changes. That makes it easier, you know. There are wonderful scanning machines, etc., etc. And she said that we must always bear in mind that it might become easier for patients to access information so that they can make an informed choice. To go into the detail of what she has proposed, Chair, I think we were all at one last time that it's maybe all the necessary detail items listed there might not be necessary. But just in essence, is it being enforced?
Through you, Chair, and honourable members. Any healthcare provider that provides any service engages in the process of getting informed consent. And in this particular case, it's even more sensitive because we know the process, public consultation, discussions around this. They are even more conscious of it. And in their training, because it's not anybody else who can do it, even the doctors who provide the service have to undergo the prescribed training. And in that training, all these issues are repeated. And I know, even in this, Commissioner Govender dealt with it. Technology changes every day, but it doesn't mean everybody is competent to use the technology. And I know there are issues of pictures and colored pictures and ultrasonograms that can be looked at. An ultrasonogram is an investigation or a confirmation of a clinical diagnosis. Yes. And that's how I think we should look at it. And, of course, I won't repeat the traumatic circumstances. Anyone who decides to go for a choice on termination of pregnancy procedure has considered it. I don't believe there's any woman, or be it a child as defined, who would not think of that. And by the time they go there, it's a very considered opinion already. And when that's why in the Act they say, during the counseling process, all these things are dealt with. But if it's in the case of a minor, and the minor still says, thank you very much, I heard everything you said, I comprehend it, my choice is that I'm not going to tell my mother or whoever I trust, my friend or whoever I trust, my uncle or my aunt, I still have decided that I need the termination. We have to respect that decision because that's how the Act is providing for it. So I can safely say that we understand that. And the issue of 20 weeks was used as part of progression. A 20-week fetus is not viable. And that's why we have to have, anyway, there are conventions and also. 24 weeks to 26 weeks is a point where most doctors, even in the developed world, will say this is a viable fetus in that once taken out of that protective environment which nourishes it, can survive in the terrible world out there where it has to compete for its own oxygen and not get it from the mom. And it has to fight infections that are protected by the amniotic fluid in the mom's uterus. So all these things come into the consideration, and we always are conscious of that as healthcare professionals. Thank you.
Further clarity-seeking question, but over and above that, can you talk to the legality part of this thing? Is it the proposal in terms of your cases that you have been undergoing constitutional, or what is your opinion on the amendment towards the Act, not regulations, not, yes.
The department says that it shouldn't be supported, Chair, because I think it doesn't add to anything. If anything, it compromises access. And I could open a discussion of how we are actually considering increasing that access, but I think it will be for another day, Chair. I mean, this is an ongoing process, and we try by all means to always balance access, and especially looking at the rural people who are most removed from it. I think Commissioner Govender referred to the issue of socioeconomic status of the people, and the socioeconomic status is always compromised the further you go from urban areas. So our stand is that we don't support it.
I think while you are saying the debate is an ongoing, the issue of access, I'm sure attached to it is becoming communication.
Yeah.
You are saying you've been moving around the whole country communicating. How effective is the communication? I don't want to argue that I'm from the periphery of South Africa, and I don't recall seeing you, but I wanted us to assure us as to what effective and measures that you can say we are doing everything in our power. That makes us to say, I think the whole amendment is not necessary. It has been covered already in terms of the information we're getting from.
Chair, at National Health, we have the cluster Maternal, Child and Women's Health, which looks and monitors and evaluates all programs around the country. And at provincial level, we have Maternal, Child and Women's Health units that deal with this. And they make sure that at district level, there are counterparts who deal with it. And I can assure the committee that all of them are always dealing with this because we monitor and evaluate what's going on. We know there are challenges, and some of them have come up. There are ongoing challenges where healthcare providers will use all sorts of arguments. But once you are in a facility that is providing the service, we expect the service managers to inform the doctor at appointment that you are expected to do this, and that is part of your service.
The last one.
Chairperson, well, the clarity seeking question that I have is about attitudes. That we normally get these complaints from the public that at the centers where this procedure is performed, the attitude of the service providers there is not up to what the public expects. So what is the department doing about these attitudes, these complaints?
Thank you, Honourable Member. There is one process that we follow, and we are aware that there are people who have attitudes, and instead of helping access, actually obstruct it. And I must make an upfront admission that everybody is constitutionally having a right to hold an opinion on something. But we always make sure that we have what we call value clarification workshop, especially if we hear that there is a particular facility where, as an example, and I would like to express that it's an example. Say a hospital manager has an attitude towards termination of pregnancy. There can be ways of actually obstructing the provision of the service. And immediately that is picked up, we address it quite seriously. And we go through those values and we try and make them aware that it is not the person, it is the service that is needed by the user. And by being a healthcare provider or a manager in that facility, you are duty bound to provide the service, because it's a right to the patient, and it's not an issue of you not doing it or you not liking termination of pregnancy. So we engage with those. And at the worst, it would be even a matter of trying to go on to the procedure of terminating the services of those people. And I know that there are ways and means that they use that can never really be dealt with at any given moment, and it's an ongoing process that we deal with as a department.
I'm convinced that we have got the presentation to our satisfaction. Thank you very much, and I think the issue that it is you need to look into is the level of the line of accounting. From people that you have put them at the service point, yourself playing monitoring, and possibly Parliament looking at you as a department, whether you are performing in line with the content of that particular piece of legislation. But nonetheless, thank you very much, and pass our gratitude to your seniors and to the Minister for allowing you to come and share with us. I'm sure you may be released if you so wish. It's upon you. We have dealt, we have closed your chapter now. You'll send us the information that you said is there, so that it helps us to arrive where we wanted to arrive. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and thanks very much to the Honourable Member.
As I indicated before, I'm going to go to the task team on member status.
No, you are relieved. I'm sure, like I've said from the beginning, there is a meeting of chairpersons that I was supposed to be there, basically because we have got issues that we have raised with the house chairperson. But because of this meeting, I could have not, attended to. So if we were to move, a bit in the remaining items, will help all of us. Item four, the media strategy document. I'm sure you have seen it.
Chair, I wouldn't mind saying if the members don't, because we are interested in what the members.
No, you are not offending anyone. Okay. If this is a public, we are representing you. It's good that you have interest in hearing what we are debating. Thank you very much. I was still saying the media strategy document, my honorable members. This document, amongst other intent to... Can we share, honorable Rea, so that we don't have many, otherwise we will confuse each other. Thank you. I'm saying the intention here is to make sure that we made an awareness campaign, starting from members of parliament, because they are the one who should then utilize this committee when they've got, you know, anything that they wanted to propose as an amendment to whatever act or a completely a new bill that they wanted to forward to parliament. But we realize that when you check the records from 94 to where we are, not much has been done by members of parliament. But over and above that, special petitioners, people out there are not utilizing the committee. Either our conviction is that they might have not know what the committee is all about. Therefore, the effort is in this piece of document that we are trying to unearth the committee towards the public through whatever method. You would recall that we agreed on the strategy that involved, you know, media through the radios, the newspapers, and what have you. The cost was seen to be very high. So while we are mitigating, you know, sufficient resources, this is one cheapest way of also, you know, going through through the Facebook and the Twitter in between, making sure that we are getting tweeted by members. They know what exactly are we for. And then with the Twitter, we would then be communicating things that we are, you know, in process to do, notifying Dr. and others that the committee will be dealing with 1, 2, 3, 4 in relation to their work and so on and so on. But the Facebook will be giving more of a profile of the committee as to what exactly are we there for. Okay? And that will be, you know, inviting submissions and comments from the public through this, you know, media strategy that we are talking about. Any comment, Honorable Pretoria?
Chairman, just a clarity-seeking question. Where does this document go? Is it just an internal document for our committee to accept the proposal, or does it go somewhere else for a further proposal?
Chair, what happened? Yeah. Thanks, Honorable Pretoria. What happened is I made the submissions of this document, but verbally, to the House Chairperson to say, would want any form of, you know, branding, you know, publicity, that the committee find the sun at the end of the day. So he seemed to say, I think you are in line with what we wanted to see in terms of, you know, the work of Parliament. But what we would want you to do is to prepare a document that will then be communicated with the IT unit, which IT will recommend to the House and House Chair and whoever is working with to say, indeed, this concept can do Parliament better. So therefore, it's a concept that we are giving the authority to authorize. Thanks.
Can I then just briefly speak about some of the aspects of the document? Thank you, Chair, for that clarity. Can I just say from our side, I think we support the concept of maximum exposure, whatever form it takes. If it's now Twitter or Facebook, it doesn't matter, but we have no objection against Twitter or Facebook. From our perspective, first of all, I need some training in Twitter and Facebook myself before we can put it on the broader spectrum for the other people. Seeing that the document goes out, I would really want to propose that we look at the end of paragraph 1, the last line, that has been successfully used by both the ANC and the Obama administration. I think I would be more comfortable if you simply say used by institutions worldwide, including the Obama administration, because all parties probably have similar functions.
So that will not make any harm to the document. It's a positive, you know, input to us. The reason we use these two is because when we were coining the document, we were using them as an example.
No, sure. No, I'll accept that. That's not a big
thing. Thank you. Any further input on the
document? Can I carry on? Page 2, I have another suggestion.
Page 2,
the definitions of on the left-hand side, there's one called officers, and I accept that's officers of Parliament. officers, officials or officials, but in the actual description it says list of members. I think that must also be officers or otherwise officials. I would propose that we change it, make officers officials, and then to read list of officials serving in the committee.
Peter will want to comment on that one.
And can I just carry on? And responsible for the functioning thereof.
Thank you, Jefferson. Thank you, Honourable Member. The reason why we used officers is just how, as Honourable Members already indicated, that they would need further training on Facebook. When you do the Facebook page, it's going to request the officers. Hence, we just clarifying that when we're creating the page where it says officers, that's where we're going to provide the list of the Honourable Members that are serving in the committee.
The secretary also wanted to add.
Will the officers be responsible for doing this list? Is that what we're saying?
No, Honourable Member. What we're saying is that the list will be done by us as the administration staff, but just to explain, these are just the key words that will be used on the Facebook itself. So when you're referring to the officers, it will be the members. So where it requires us to fill in the names of the officers for Facebook, that's when we're going to put in the list of all the members that are in the committee.
Okay, I don't quite understand it, but that's not a big thing for me. I just thought it was a clear mistake there, but it's fine. Can I just make one last question or suggestion? The one under admins, list of support staff with administrative privileges. The word privileges in Parliament has a very specific meaning. I just wonder whether we shouldn't change it to duties.
I think you may be right. What they were trying to say here is they will be the one who will be making,
right
to change the amends and put in your thing. Because if you give to everybody, there will be distortion of what is, you know, there. So it should be, within the specific, administrative level. Okay? We will change that term because it might mean they are now acquiring privileges members to have. Okay? Further?
Thank you, Chairperson. As we are proposing all this, can't we propose that we must have a joint committee? Because there is this committee on the NCOP and there is this one on the MA. Can we not propose that we have a joint committee?
I think the proposal, Honourable Member, is on the other documents, the review. It's where you will find it here exactly. On the review is where we are talking about the joint committee. Here we were talking about the strategy.
No,
let's not confuse
things.
Right. Okay. Is there, can we then, it's our document. We'll continue, once they've given us an authority, we will, continue to amend and change here and there. But the impression we got is that Parliament is moving towards this, but realizing that we are the committee who then make a proposal before any other, we might then be used as a model for Parliament as a committee on this particular thing. And we'll also take into notification the point that members have raised that they would want to be, trained and understand the usage and the usage of both Facebook and Twitter. Okay? Moving forward. Thank you. Can we then move to 5? The review document, which I wanted to believe that you have managed to went through it. You can comment if you have anything that you wanted to comment on the document. Because the significance of this one, it is to be tabled before the Rules Committee. Not Rules Committee, it's Rules of Programming, whatever they call it. In fact, all of them, they will be affected by this document. We realize that, keeping on said, we need the legislation to the effect of governing Petition Act might not be given away until we amend the rules first. That therefore, this is the intention to say rules should be re-looked into by the Rules Committee, and then thereafter then moving towards a Petition Act. Because as long as the current status is will refer us as a special petition. We cannot, you know, bring a petition act in this particular name. We need to change the name first and then talk to petition act. Any comments on the document?
Honorable, I've been around for many years, but I still don't understand what the difference is between a committee and a standing committee.
Yeah, I think it's one point that we are raising in this debate to say, if you look at the rules of NA, it does not have a specific reference to say this one is a standing committee. A standing committee occurs when the committee. It's not a line functionary kind of a committee. You're transverse. You move from this side to that side. You move from health up until presidency. You move from, you know, education up until environment. So you have got, you know, a variety of responsibility across the state departments. I'm not sure whether advocate you wanted to add something on that. It's exactly that. I'm sure even SCOPA, when you look at here, it's just called a committee on public accounts. But because of the, you know, the transversal kind of, then it has been referred to standing committee. Honorable Pretoria.
Just to confirm, Chair, that SCOPA is not a standing committee. SCOPA is mentioned in the rules as a separate committee. Standing committee really refers to a committee which has a duration for this, for the full life of Parliament, effectively like a portfolio committee. But I've got no problem with the suggestions in this thing. I think it makes real sense. Can I just ask whether there's been consultation with the NCOP about what we wanted to propose? I presume there has been some consultation, that this is not something new to them, they would accept it.
I think from the beginning, we together had a joint strategic planning, and the concept was then emanated from that particular meeting. So we are still continuing to exchange information when we talk all that.
If SCOPA is not a standing committee, what is it? Because if SCOPA is standing committee on public,
that's the way SCOPA is called now. But if you look at the rules, it's not one of the committees mentioned under the heading portfolio or standing committees. It's got a separate entity. That's why the old dispensation, SCOPA wasn't called SCOPA, it was called tax. We called it tax, public accounts committee. It just happened to change. The name was changed, but for the wrong reasons. Yeah, there's no standing committees on public accounts.
I'm sure you can quickly go to page 44, 121, where they're talking about list of committee, the rules. Then it then said the on F. The Committee on Public Accounts established by Rule 204. It's a committee like any other committee. The fact, the difference here, it is SCOPA has also been have a reference to it by the Constitution. I'm sure that's where the difference also is. Okay. Any further? Honourable Pretorius.
And just for clarity purposes, I'm not sure there's a word missing right at the end. Paragraph E, recommendation E. The latter part, which says we're created to deal with all forms of petitions with separate NA and NCOP something. There's committees or what? I'm just going to question mark there. It seems to be there's a word missing. Or am I reading it wrong? I don't know. Huh? Oh, great. Something missing there.
I thought it's still maybe what it's missing might be just committee.
I thought so too.
Yeah,
maybe it's committee.
Okay. To say
components.
Yeah.
No,
that's what I hated. You remember I've said it, that I don't want to see them, all of them. Okay. In a lighter note, you know, so where the debate comes from, that's why it kind of ended one of them. Any further comments on the document?
Oh, what? just make a comment about language, but my colleague across the floor said we shouldn't do that. I think on the first page we talk about the rules, and then it says it. I think it must be they. On the first page, in the middle somewhere.
That's what I said. I don't want that, of course. But anyhow, thank you very much. Right, it's fine. We'll look at that. Okay. And further input on this document? Which I don't want. That's what I don't want. So can we get an indication? Do we then take it to be our document? Thank you. Any objection? Oh, yes and no comes from one person. Anyhow, in the light of no objection, thank you. That will be our working document. We'll improve on it every time we feel we wanted something. Can we move then to 6, the progress for the third quarter? I'm sure you would see it. Would want to start immediately on arrival with the strategic workshop to prepare ourselves by looking at where we're coming from and then preparing for our way forward in the next, you know, period that will be operating. Would then, of course, maybe what I didn't say earlier, the Portfolio Committee on Health could not attend today. They said they are going to request a time to be consulted and make their presentation separately. We will then amend this to accommodate them in between there. We will then, on the 23rd, intend to talk to the Land and Agricultural Development Bank Act proposal that is before us. We'll see, because you remember we said the other committees we've given them up until the 31st, and I want to confirm that the 31st of June, I don't know which one is the last day, but I want to confirm that letters to the speaker that we have said now consultation will request that consultation through the office of the speaker have been prepared. That here we're just going to sign and send to them. And then on the 30th, we'll then be given an opportunity to listen to Honorable Davidson on the proposal on prohibiting party political office bearers, public representatives, as well as political parties from contracting with the state. On the 6th August, we'll then be, of course, on the same day, we'll be considering these inputs, whether we are arriving at a determination after that hearing. On the 6th, we'll then have again another presentation coming from Honorable Davidson, of course, by stakeholders by that day, I guess. And then we'll then look at the second presentation by Davidson again on the 6th, which then intends to look at the anomaly that relates to the Executive Members Ethic Act, number 82 of 1998. Okay. I know for a fact that you will be celebrating the day in which you have seen the planet. Okay. No, in advance, even if I can forget, you must know I'm wishing you all the best. So just put them in a package of, you know, carrying forward. Okay, thank you very much. On the 13th,
I wanted to check the one that amended on the study talk. When is that, so that when I read it? Oh, now I remember.
And on the 13th, we'll be receiving stakeholders' presentations on the prohibition of you know, the proposed legislation by Honorable Davidson. And would then also receive a presentation by Honorable Lee on the repeal of the South African Boxing Act number 11 of 2001. then we would then move to the 20th. On the 20th, we'll be debating and receiving submission by stakeholders on honorable Lee submissions. And these things are many, man. So on the same day, we'll receive a presentation by Honorable Grayley on the regulation of the very same committee that we are sitting in. It's funny that will be dictated by. Then on the 23rd, it's not in your program. 27, up until the 3rd of September, 27 of August to the 3rd, possibly we might be undertaking either preferably Australia study tour if we finally get, you know, approve the way plan from 27 to the 3rd of September, 27th of August to the 3rd of September. Then, of course, on that day of the 27th, if we are here, we'll then be looking at the backlog of whatever might have been remained behind and close it in that way. On the 3rd, if we will not be going anywhere, this is what we'll be doing, debating and deliberating on the Honorable Grayley submissions. Then the 10th of September, we will then look at our work to bring the committee work up to date. And then on the 17th, the same thing, so that we close our particular time. I think on the 23rd of July, we will be looking at the report of this quarter, which you will then have to adopt it. Okay? Any input?
Just one question, sir. What stakeholders are we going to hear on the 23rd of July?
Land and rural development, agriculture and forestry, blah blah, and then I'm sure finance. Yeah, that's what we'd want. Okay. Further input on the program? Any mover for adoption?
No.
Honorable Sasiba Seconda. Thank you, Honorable Sasiba. The minutes. Anything on the minutes? Did you receive them? Page 1. The minutes of the 28th. Normally, when we correct, I'm hearing us saying, no, my name is not there for apology. That's what I normally had. Anything on the page 1? Sure. Page 2? Honorable Pretoria?
Not an English teacher, but I want to point out something. Paragraph
2.1.
Provisions of the proposed so-and-so were inconsistent. That was. With the purport of primary act, the choice, I think that must be the choice of termination, not the choice on termination. Choice of termination.
Okay.
And B, provisions, again, were.
Yeah.
That's all on that page, I think, yeah.
Page 3. Is Honorable. No, you have polluted the Honorable Pretoria.
Yeah.
Oh, they're saying that you are English. It's not something that should worry you because we have taken termination on from the act. No, it's themselves who are quoting what they're saying. We're talking about that. Oh, okay. No, thank you. Taken on board. Page 3. See, when you deal with the presentation, sometimes it's good when we are just taking copy of their documents so that we don't come and then worry about what they have said. Page 4. Last page. Honorable Pretoria.
Which page? Page 4.
Yeah.
Professor Mansfield made comment about the fact that she had medical backing for what she was saying, and we requested at the end that she provide that medical backing to us.
I'm sure.
And I would propose that we put at least one sentence in the end, something along this. Professor Mansfield stated that her views were supported by medical practitioners and she had attempted to arrange for the submission of these views to the committee.
I'm sure that will be into. That was page 4 on top, page 4 below. And last page. And move on. Honorable member, seconder of Honorable Pretoria, you are seconding the adoption of the
bill. Can I just come back to that page 2, whether that option on?
Page 2. Yeah.
I agree it must be on termination, but the second on, in the second line, inconsistent with the purpose of the primary, the choice.
Still the same.
Yeah,
it's
still
the same. I'll rest my case. Thank you very much. Then, seconder, then, after. I'm sure this brought us to the end of the meeting. And thank you very much, honorable members. I want to take this opportunity to wish you all the best in your constituency work period. And you will keep updated in terms of the work of the committee while you are at home. So keep on checking on your emails on your Twitter page also and your Facebook. So you will see the work of the committee as we keep on doing our work. Thank you very much. Enjoy your time and your respective home. Until we meet again on the 21st. The intention here is you may then be requested to sleep over wherever we have the workshop, and then we will all wake up there, start as early as 8 o'clock, finish as late as 7 o'clock in the evening, so that we prepare for better for our committee in the remaining period of the committee work. Thank you.
I think it's good for the members to hear from Mr. President saying, I wish you all the best in your campaigning, and I must say very well. Last time it was not you who said that. I wanted you to say that to us.
Thank you very much.